about this.
Our brains change.
Memory is an amazing.
What you think is in
our
there
brains
is
aren't
really
finished. They're not fully cooked yet.
You go with your heart. And
we don't have any idea why
because
we're doing
so smart.
Most of the things that we're doing. But here's the deal.
Yuck.
I'm Bob Duke.
I'm Art Markman.
I'm Rebecca McEnroy, and this is Two Guys on Your Head. Today, the yuck factor and morality.
There's a lot of things that are bad for us, right? If you think about our sensory systems, one of the things our sensory systems do is that things that are going to be good for us in some way are things where we get a pleasant sensory experience from them, and things that are not going to be so good for us, we get an unpleasant sensory experience, so that we tend to gravitate towards the things that are good for us and away from things that are bad for us. And when it comes to things in particular that would be bad for us to ingest, we get a disgust reaction from them that is designed to prevent us from actually ingesting them. And so that's the basis of these disgust reactions. But human beings being what they are, we are able to then co-opt these systems to create disgust reactions for all sorts of other things that aren't necessarily either bad for us to ingest, even though they might be things we might ingest, but then we can also get disgust reactions to things that are more conceptual. And so you might see a behavior and actually be disgusted by that behavior, even though it doesn't necessarily involve any particular ingestion.
Right? Even though it does trigger the same suite of responses in the body, it is an interesting transition, what Art's just mentioning, about things that used to be only in earlier iterations of our species were only having to do with physical things, having to do with survival, and now have to do with conceptual things, with ideas that actually you watch the face of disgust or the facial expression that most human beings display when they sense disgust. And that can be elicited now by things that have nothing to do with a potential toxin or anything like that. And yet the response is very similar.
Yeah. And so, for example, disgust has come to have a moral dimension to it. That is, things that we find immoral are often then associated with disgust.
And the interesting thing is, the magnitude of disgust varies among individuals, right? So there are pretty wide differences about what people find disgusting about various things and how intense those feelings actually are. And so when you look at people who hold very strong moral views about something that they would define as disgusting, their responses are actually more intense. It's not just a conceptual thing. Their responses are actually more intense than someone who might be better able to tolerate that thing, whatever that thing happens to be, it's particularly when it comes to things related to human behavior, right? I mean, we have some interesting data that indicate that, to at least to some extent, people who tend to be more easily put off in a term that we would call as disgust tend to respond differently to human beings who are unlike them.
There's a lot of great data on disgust in general. Paul Rozin, for example, has spent a huge amount of his career thinking about the concept of disgust. And there are
great guy to sit next to on a plane, I bet.
Yeah. And there are all sorts of things that people can't really shut off. And he's done some wonderful experiments. So, for example, he'll take just a little plastic disc, like the thing you might use to cover the drain of your bathtub. He'd say, would you be willing to put that in your mouth? And people, it's sterile. So people will say, yeah, okay. So they put that in their mouth. Then he'll say, okay, here's a plastic cockroach. Piece of plastic, people pick it up. It's a piece of plastic. Would you be willing to put that in your mouth? And people are much less willing to put,
sure,
here's a piece of plastic shaped like feces. It's totally sterile. You can even get people to dip it in alcohol themselves and clean it off. They don't want to put that in their mouths. Now, there's nothing about the actual object that is dangerous to you. And yet, you don't want to put this in your mouth.
Because we're not making that decision and we're not responding to that with the reasoning part of our brain. Because we're not saying, well, yes, well, it's a piece of plastic and it was manufactured and it never has been feces. But it's just, it calls up all these memories and associations with what that is and what things like that are. And suddenly it becomes a more difficult task.
And this then translates into all sorts of other objects. And so there's all this wonderful work on contagion that I love that engages both desire and disgust related to that. So, for example, there's work done where you can ask people to imagine, well, imagine I gave you a sweater. Would you wear it? Yeah, sure. It's a sweater. I'd wear it. And I said, well, imagine that this sweater had belonged to Adolf Hitler. Would you wear Hitler's sweater? No amount of washing this sweater is gonna make you comfortable wearing that. Why? I mean, it's an article of clothing, but it is the contagion. That sweater has been contaminated by contact with a vile human being. And therefore, you know, you don't want to get anywhere near it. And it works the other way as well. I mean, this is why people want autographs. I mean, why do you want an autographed picture? You have this beautiful picture and then somebody wrote on it. But we actually want that because the autograph is proof of connection. And sometimes that can actually override the disgust reaction. And this is my favorite example. So back in the early 1980s, there's a great Coca-Cola commercial in which Mean Joe Green, who is a huge hulking guy, is walking through the tunnel under the stadium. And this little boy sees him and hands him a Coca-Cola, and he drinks the whole thing and he feels better, and he pulls this jersey off his back and he throws it to the boy, and the boy is beaming from ear to ear. And I've always loved this commercial because we all understand that, you know, this little kid getting a piece of clothing from his idol. But, you know, at some level you think to yourself, if an enormous human being pulled a sweaty shirt off his back and threw it to you, is your first reaction going to be to grin from ear to ear? Well, generally speaking, not. But if it happens to be your football hero, then maybe.
Exactly. We tend to think that moral judgments are only a part of human reason, a product of human reasoning. I mean, the reason we've thought about the landscape and decided this is what we should do and this is what we shouldn't do. And that ignores completely all of the innate responses that we have to things that evolved over millennia as a way of increasing the likelihood of our survival and passing on our genes. So there are things that are part of us that are influencing our behavior, but we tend to think of decisions having to do with moral judgments as being divorced from anything about our physical reactions to things. And as Art was pointing out earlier, disgust is one of those things that actually influences moral codes.
Next week on the show, we'll talk about the benefits of failure with Dr. Art Markman and Dr. Bob Duke. To check out this and other episodes of Two Guys, go to KUT.org. We're also podcasting Two Guys on Your Head on iTunes. I'm Rebecca McEnroy, and I produce Two Guys on Your Head at KUT Radio in Austin, Texas. Support for Two Guys on Your Head comes in part from the Center for Music Therapy, providing brain training for movement disorders.